morning, everybody. Welcome. And let's hear it up one more time, or give it up one more time for Remedy Drive, okay? We are in a series called Life Hacks from Proverbs, Real Proverbs for Real Problems. And we've covered several different topics already, but today we want to address the topic of parenting. If you're not a parent, I would encourage you to listen to this as it relates to how you were parented, or maybe someday you will be a parent and better to learn now and take it with you, or maybe you're in a spiritual parenting role where you're discipling someone. That can be helpful. And it also is helpful to think about this in light of how God the Father is parenting us. I doubt that there are many things in life that are more important or carry more responsibility than the role and calling of being a parent. Those of us who are parents are called daily to shape the hearts and minds and lives of those little image bearers that God has entrusted into our care. So let's begin today by acknowledging the incredible joys of parenting. We, my wife and I, have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of joyful, wonderful, funny memories, delightful times with our kids, and funny things they did or said. And kids and grandchildren can bring so much joy to the heart of a parent. They can also break your heart. I remember when our kids were quite little, I was home alone with them. Janet was gone somewhere, and I was tucking them in for bed, and I prayed with them, and one of them said, "Dad, how come when mom's home, we go to bed at 8 o'clock, but when you're here alone with us, we go to bed at 6 o'clock. I was hoping they didn't notice. Good discussion. Some of you that are parents, especially of little kids, the time of day that you look forward to the most is not bedtime, it's after bedtime. Some of you know, young kids, when bedtime, it's like somebody flipped a switch and everything breaks loose, right? But once they're asleep, you're like, this is the part of the day. Thank God for the day, but this part. And you look at them and you think, they look like angels right now. Chuck Swindoll tells a true story. Perhaps you can relate. So the young couple has two little girls. The younger child is constantly on the move, never sits still, rarely winding down at bedtime. So the nightly routine becomes something of a familiar routine. A story from her favorite book, a drink of water because she's thirsty, then she wants to pray, then a song, then she wants her doll, then she wants her blanket, then she wants another drink of water, then she's got to go to the bathroom, then there's a warning, then there's a kiss and hug, then there's another kiss and hug. How many of you can relate to something like that? Like it takes an hour and a half to put the kids to bed. It's just like one thing after the other. True story. In this story, the dad finally got the kids quiet and tried to sneak out the room. How many of you got memories of trying to sneak out the room, right? I remember so well, like tapping, rubbing their back, tapping, and I think they're sleeping. And then you stop, and they cry, and then you start patting again. And then finally, you stop patting, and you keep the motion going. Right? And then it's like, okay, and you're like, and you get right by the door, and wah! And you run back in, and then you go, right? And I mean, how many times you've gone back and forth thinking they're sleeping? Well, in this case, the dad finally sneaks out of the room, gets in the living room, sits in his favorite chair in front of the fireplace, and he's there like a minute, and he hears this scream from this little girl's room. He runs in there, runs next to her bedside, and there's big tears running down her cheeks. He said, "What happened?" She said, "I burned my tongue." He said, "You what?" She said, "I burned my tongue. How in the world did you do that?" She said, "I licked my nightlight." True story. She couldn't control her curiosity. You all probably have stories, especially when your kids were young. Well, Proverbs is a book that tells us. The whole book is about seeking wisdom and avoiding foolishness or folly. That's the theme of the whole book of Proverbs. Therefore, when Proverbs addresses the topic of parenting, it addresses us in the same categories of addressing foolishness and building in wisdom. So let's establish a basic purpose statement from Proverbs to guide us as parents. Okay, here it is. A parent's responsibility is to drive out foolishness, to build in wisdom, and to do it all in the context of love. So let's break that down a little bit and get a little deeper into each one of those. Proverbs 22:15, the first part of it says, foolishness is bound in the heart of a child. Every child, even your child. So what is foolishness? Well, in a general category, Psalm 14:1 says, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. Or the fool is basically one who doesn't acknowledge God or their need for God. The foolishness basically says, I can live my life on my own. I don't need God. I'm central. The world revolves around me, not God or anybody else. And so because every one of us is born with a sin nature, every one of us is born living independent of God and finding life outside of a relationship with God. That's the essence of foolishness. And the Bible says that that foolishness, that belief that life is about me and revolves around me, it's bound in the heart of a child. And the word bound comes from the Hebrew word deo, a D-E-O, and it simply means to attach, to fasten, to make one a prisoner, or to control. So foolishness is bound or attached or fastened to the heart of every child. Every child is a prisoner to foolishness or under the control of foolishness and under the belief that life can be found outside of God and life's about me and my fulfillment and happiness. So a parent's job, in part, is to drive out that foolishness and to teach that child wisdom, not just from Proverbs, but from the whole of God's counsel and the whole of God's truth and his word. So there's four basic kinds of foolishness. We don't have time to develop these, but at least you can hear them and categorically start to think how foolishness plays out in at least four different ways. Okay, the first kind of foolishness is power and control, where the child is fighting for power in the relationship between the child and the parent or parents. The child wants things to go his or her way. The child is determined to have control and will fight you for it. The focus is on them getting what they want, and if you enter into the power struggle, you are feeding the problem. We could say more, but there's a YouTube video, perhaps you've seen it, of probably a 2 or 3 year old little boy who wants a cupcake. And he's talking to his mom, and the mom has a conversation. So let's watch.
Listen to me. Like I do this all the time. And if I go out at the house with the door, Matt has his toys, and then Matt has all his toys.
Okay, but I have to yell at you guys.
Okay, Linda, Linda, listen. Listen.
Okay, what?
Like, everything they do at this house, they can't trust everything at Grandma's house.
Okay.
Okay, then what?
Then you're not listening to me.
Then you're not listening to me.
I asked you not to do something.
No, but listen to me. Look it. If you do something, if you get that out, that thing off, you're going to break it.
Okay. But I'm asking, I'm letting you know
but
that you cannot,
know, Linda,
no,
Linda, I'm, lick it.
You're not listening to me.
Linda,
listen to me now.
Listen to me now.
No, you're not listening. I said no cupcakes, and you try to get cupcakes, and you try to ask Grandma.
Linda,
didn't you?
Linda, lick it. But Linda, honey, lick it. Right now, they can't do anything if we can't get everything out of the wall. If we can break everything down.
Folks, this goes on for a couple more minutes. It gets to the point where he's saying, listen, Linda. It's his mother. Now he's calling her by her first name. So, classic example of a mother who's in a power struggle, and as long as you enter the power struggle, The kid is going to stay engaged to try to win, as you clearly saw. So who's the parent here, right? That's one example. A second kind of foolishness is reward without responsibility. Reward without responsibility. The child wants privileges, benefits, and rewards from the parent without any kind of personal responsibility. They want everything done for them. The parent becomes a servant or a slave to whatever the child wants or needs and demands. The parent may feel like it's love by giving the child what they want, but it's really called enabling and feeding the problem. The third kind of foolishness is revenge, and it's basically you hurt me in some way, and I'm going to hurt you back. I'm going to do whatever I can to get you to notice me, pay attention to me, and to meet my needs. The child may not even be aware of how they're hurt, but are reacting to some kind of disappointment and hurt and are trying to hurt back. They're reacting to it nonetheless. So the parent needs to probe to find out how the child's been hurt to see what they're actually reacting to. And then the fourth kind of foolishness is withdrawal. When a child starts to shut down or withdraw, they're silent. They don't tell you what's really going on inside. They avoid involvement in things they used to enjoy. They're relationally distant or recluse. They won't open up or communicate about how they're feeling. And so the parent is kind of left wondering and guessing about what's going on in their child's life. Those are the four basic kinds. And Proverbs tells us to drive out foolishness with discipline. Now, when you hear the word discipline, let's remember that the root word of discipline is disciple. And a disciple is a loyal learning follower or is a student or a pupil and is learning wisdom. So when you think about discipline as a means to teach wisdom and to instruct on that God's ways and truth are better than our ways, then discipline is not punitive. It's not you're punishing a child for wrongdoing. It's corrective. It's redemptive. It's for the benefit of the child, not just to punish. And there's a big difference between punishing and correcting or being redemptive. So it says, Proverbs 22:15 says, foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, and the rod of discipline will remove it far from him. So what's the rod of discipline? It's not what you might think. So Janet's going to come and help us think a little bit deeper about what a rod is and what a rod of discipline is.
No, stay here. Come back. You're not done.
Okay.
You're going to demonstrate a rod. This is not a rod. This is a staff.
Okay.
So.
Want me to get my rod? Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. I'll tell you first. All right. This staff with the crook on it is like an extension of a shepherd's hand, arm. And he can move his sheep along with it. He can pick one up that is out of his reach with his hand. If it's gone over a cliff or something, pull it back to safety. It's an extension of the shepherd's hand that's meant to bring it close, bring a sheep close. That's the staff. So the rod is also, yes,
we have a shape here.
A little victim here.
I got this thing in Israel and we had it mounted. Just kidding, kidding. It's not real. Okay, sorry.
Yeah.
I got in a hunting mode.
Yeah, I know. Okay, when danger comes along for a sheep, it could be like a bear.
A bear?
Yeah. And the rod is used to get that thing to back off. Pretty good.
There goes the bear. He's running
goodbye.
Away from the
yeah,
sheep.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay.
So you see the relief on the sheep's face at that? Thank you.
Okay, I'm
now
done.
You can
okay.
go. We don't know that much about sheep and shepherds because in our country that's just not a normal occupation or major in university. So, and yet it's all throughout the Bible and it was very much a part of that culture. And now you'd have to probably go to the Middle East or North Africa to really start understanding what a shepherd's life is like, what sheep are like. So we're going to talk about that because these two examples, the rod especially that's mentioned here, is directly one of the two main tools that a shepherd has to know how to use in order to be a good shepherd. And we don't really understand what he did with the rod. So as I said, the staff is definitely for pulling close. The rod is for pushing back the bad things. Sometimes it's for defending from another animal. Sometimes, because sheep don't know good plants from bad plants, they will start eating or heading towards something poisonous. The shepherd has to throw that rod to disrupt that action, not at the sheep, but between the danger and the sheep. It's also for stopping them from falling off of something, or he will throw the rod ahead of a sheep to make it scared and back off, but not at the sheep. So when we think about sheep, think about children and the similarities to them. And the shepherd would be the parents and the similarities to them. Sheep are vulnerable. They have no means of self-defense at all, except to run. Children are wide open to danger, harm, suffering. They're not born with ability to take care of themselves. They're totally dependent on the adults in their lives. Sheep are born with only natural instincts. They cannot survive on their own. Same with children. Those tiny babies are completely at our mercy for everything. Sheep are insecure and fearful. They need the presence of their shepherd. If the shepherd gets out of sight, they become nervous and skittish. It's not a healthy situation. Sheep cannot take care of themselves. They need care constantly, 24/7. A shepherd's job does not end at 5. They're there all night. Sheep need safety and security in order to thrive. Otherwise, they're just nervous and do not do well in their health. I don't know if you've noticed, when a mom and dad are in a fight and the kids are around, especially little ones, their eyes are going to your faces and watching for cues of, you know, am I safe? Are things okay here? I don't feel secure in this situation, even though they may not understand the language or the things you're saying. They catch that emotion. And sometimes they'll join right in, and they don't even know why. They're just distressed because they see distress. Sheep need the right food to be provided. They don't recognize dangerous from healthy. Same with children. They need us for their nutrition and their health and all the good things that they need in their lives. All of that is dependent on the shepherd. Sheep are a lot of work. There are two kinds of shepherds. There are bad shepherds, and they will neglect the sheep. The sheep will become healthy, unhealthy, sickly animals. Bad shepherds do not feed, water, or keep them comfortable. Bad shepherds do not protect their sheep, and there's so many things that they're at risk from. I'll just name a few. Of course, there are the animals, the wolves, the bears, nose worms. I'll let you look that up on your own. Poisonous plants, storms coming through, they have no means of protecting themselves. If another sheep's a bully, they can't do anything about it except run away. Bad shepherds do not move the sheep to good pasture. When a field gets used up by the sheep, they need to be moved to a new place where they can find fresh food. That's a lot of work. Can you imagine moving 50 animals to another place and keeping them all together and safe? A bad shepherd does not care about them. He just sees it as a job, a lousy job. There's no connection with the care of the sheep. Now there's the good shepherds. And if you would read Psalm 23, I think it's a beautiful picture of what parenting's about. It gives us a picture of the reality of a good shepherd and how he treats his sheep, which are us. We're his sheep. So read that with parents' eyes. Good shepherds are always watching, always vigilant for the good of their children. Good shepherds stay near to the sheep. They have to be fully present all the time. Good shepherds bring them to the good pastures. Good shepherds protect them from all the things that would bother them or hurt them or kill them. Good shepherds find good water, good pasture, and they basically keep them alive and thriving. That's a good shepherd. There's one in the Bible who is called the Good Shepherd. In John 10, Jesus said, "I am the Good Shepherd." The Good Shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. And in Isaiah, we all, like sheep, have gone astray. Each of us has turned to his own way. That describes us very well as humans. So sheep are people. And a sheep is like having a permanent two-year-old. They're cute, they're cuddly, funny, but you can't turn your back on them for a minute. They are totally dependent on the parents' care in order to thrive. So we people are like sheep, totally dependent on our shepherd's care if we're going to survive and thrive in this world. And our children are the lambs, totally dependent on our care. He's the good shepherd. His rod is our defense, our warning of danger, our protection, not to beat us with. That would be how a bad shepherd would treat his sheep. So what are our rods? We don't have the physical wooden rods. What are our rods? Our rods are words that warn our children of danger. Choices that keep our children safe in this very dangerous world. Our rods are life choices that are for their good, not for our own comfort. Our rods are poised in our hands for those moments when evil comes around to destroy them and eat them up. Our rods are warnings to predators that seek to harm our children. Our rods are not to use on our children, but rather as protection of them. And our rods are to bring comfort to their hearts and spirits. Psalm 23, one of my all-time favorite chapters. The Lord is my shepherd. I have everything I need. Even if I walk through a very dark valley, I will not be afraid because you are with me. Your rod and your shepherd's staff comfort me. May we be good shepherds to our lambs. Lead, protect, comfort, and love them well.
So the reminder is that Jesus as our good shepherd, and Psalm 23 in particular, is a great model of parenting, how God the Father and how Jesus parents us or shepherds us, and is a model of how we are called to shepherd and love our kids. So let me just remind us that a parent's responsibility is to drive out foolishness, to build in wisdom through instruction and example, and to do it all in the context of love. So we're to build in wisdom, so drive out foolishness, but more so, we're to build in wisdom through example and instruction. So we tell them, we teach them, but we also show them. I think we all know that children are always watching. And they're always listening. And they see when we cut corners. They see when we as parents are compromising or lying or we don't tell the truth or we're not being honest about something or when we are starting to neglect our relationship with God. They see that. They sense that. But they also see when we're honest, when we go the extra mile to serve someone or to care for someone or to help somebody else out, or they see us when we take time to crack open our Bibles, and they're always watching and always learning, and more is caught than taught, but we need to do both. Proverbs chapter 9, verse 10 says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding." So if foolishness is a life that's about me, then wisdom is a life that's learning how to be about God and about His purposes and His ways. So it says the beginning of wisdom is when we turn to God in dependent trust and we're learning from Him and He's teaching us His ways because they're so much better. So we drive out foolishness, we build in wisdom through example and instruction, and we do it all in the context of love. So our motivation in driving out foolishness, building in wisdom, is because we love the child and we want what's best for them. And we must be honest with ourselves when something else is driving us. Let's be honest that sometimes we're motivated by anger or frustration when kids aren't listening or doing what we're telling them to do, or when we're hurt by our kids because they did or said something that made us feel disrespected or dishonored, or they didn't obey us. Or fear can often drive us instead of love. We're so afraid of how they're going to turn out, or afraid that they're going to do or say something that's going to reflect bad on us and make us look bad. Shame of what other people may think. So we have to be honest about how at times we can be concerned about how we look as parents, and then we put pressure on our kids to be what we want them to be or what we want them to do for our image and for our sake instead of what's best for them. So be honest about those other motivators that easily can drive us in our parenting. There can be negative reasons in how we raise or discipline our children. But the other problem is that parents that don't discipline their children at all or correct them. Proverbs 29:15 says, "The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child who gets his own way brings shame to his mother." Rod and reproof give wisdom, but when a child's left on their own, brings shame upon the mother. Proverbs 29:17, "Correct your son and he will give you comfort. He will also delight in your soul." So when you discipline and correct your child out of love and for the right reasons, hopefully someday that they will thank you for that, because it's really helped guide their life and taught them wisdom. Proverbs 13:24, "He who withholds the rod," or withholds correction, "hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him diligently." Again, remember what Janet said about the rod, what it was for? In Psalm 23, it says, "Your rod and your staff comfort me." It doesn't harm me. It doesn't wound me. It comforts me because it's correcting and teaching me wisdom. Now, sadly, it's become more and more common for parents not to discipline their children and kind of let them do as they please, and they cater to them, and they actually feed foolishness. I think every parent has to decide, prayerfully consider, how you discipline or how you correct. You got to figure that out, because there's no blueprint on how to do that. But whatever form of discipline you use, just make sure that you're sure that you're sure that the motive is love, and it's for the best interest of the child, and it's not somehow subtly for you as the parent. In 1 Samuel chapter 2, we're told about the story of Hannah, who wanted a child and didn't have one, prayed and prayed. Finally, God gave her a child. She said, "If you give me a child, I'll dedicate him to you all the days of his life." And so when Samuel's about 2, she went and dedicated him to the Lord in the temple. And then he was being raised by Eli, the priest of the temple. And Eli actually did a pretty good job with raising Samuel. But if you read chapter 2 of 1 Samuel, God is very concerned with Eli's lack of discipline of his 2 sons, Hophni and Phinehas. And you can read it for yourself. God deals with Eli pretty strongly because of his failure to discipline his 2 children, those 2 sons. So there's 2 questions that every child is asking. First question is, am I loved? Do you really love me no matter what? Every child is asking that. And the second question is, can I have my own way? And so Dr. Dan Allender, who's coming in October for a 2-day seminar called To Be Told, it's about story. Make sure you sign up. Little commercial there. He does a great job in a book called How Children Raise Their Parents, the name of the book. He does a great job playing out how there's 4 different ways you can answer those 2 questions. There's 2 different, 4 different combinations. And so I'm going to just briefly map them out. Again, we don't have time to develop it, but you can do further study on this yourself. But so if you took a box and cut it in 4, and there's 2 ways you can answer the am I loved, yes or no, and can I have my own way, yes or no. So the first combination, the first quadrant, would be am I loved, no, not really. Can I have my own way? Yes. And in that kind of a home, the parents are pretty non-involved and hands-off. They're not relationally involved with the children. And the children typically in that kind of home are pretty self-centered, greedy, angry, insecure, and demanding, just generally. Okay, these are generalizations. Am I loved? No. Can I have my own way? Yes. The second quadrant is, am I loved? No. Can I have my own way? No. That's where the parents have a harsh dictatorship. It's the parents' way or the highway. You don't have a choice. And typically a child in that kind of environment where they don't feel loved and they can't have their own way, there's a lot of rigidity and rules, that child will feel incredibly insecure and inadequate and will either become a robot just to conform to please mom and dad because they don't want to deal with the fallout, or they'll become a rebel. They become a robot or a rebel. The third option is, am I loved? Yes. Can I have my own way? Yes. Typically in that home, there's an emphasis on relationship and being close. The parents are often possessive, but the child grows up knowing they're loved, but they're also used to getting what they want. And so that child in a home like that typically is pretty self-confident and self-assured and spoiled and can be demanding. And because they're confident that they're loved, but they also equate being loved with getting whatever they want. And then the fourth quadrant is, am I loved? Yes. Can I have my own way? No. That's the ideal. That's the way God parents us. He loves us absolutely unconditionally, but can we have whatever we want? No. I mean, that's the ideal. It's more like this. Am I loved? Yes. Can I have my own way? No. You see where the emphasis is? And being loved, but because I love you, no, you can't have whatever you want. And that, and a child that's in that kind of a home typically grows up feeling pretty secure, pretty well-balanced, pretty self-assured and protected, and, you know, so that's the ideal. Now, ask yourself, you know, again, you can't just say first it's one category, but generally, what kind of home did you grow up in? Typically, or generally, I'd say I grew up in a home, am I loved? Yes. Can I have my own way? Yes. And I knew that I was loved, but pretty much could do what I wanted. And so I can see the effects of that, and I'm still working through some of that. And then the second question is, what kind of a home generally are you providing for your children, or did you? One of those 4 combinations. It can just be helpful, not to shame anything, but just to be helpful in thinking that through. I want to share 1 more verse as we close. It's found in Proverbs 22:6. It says, train up a child in the way that he should go, and even when he is old, he will not depart from it. So training includes teaching, but it also includes showing and demonstrating wisdom through example. Now, many people take this verse to mean that if I raise my child in a Christian home and teach them to follow Jesus, that when they get old, they will not depart from it or depart from following Christ. But that's not what the verse means. We probably all know parents who did their best to raise their kids in a Christian home, and those kids grew up and have departed from following Christ and have not returned. Still hope they will, but that's not a promise. That's not one of those promise verses, and that's not what it means. What might it mean? I think many, many years ago, Chuck Swindoll is the one who helped me understand what this means. Train up a child in the way he should go. The word way is the Hebrew word derek, D-E-R-E-K, derek. And derek means the unique way of that child. In other words, find out who you have. Discover that unique child, that personality, the unique bent of that child, and raise them according to the way they're wired and designed and the way they've been created by God. And that's going to be different from any other child. And the word derek, the way, is also used in a different, two different verses in Proverbs. This is very fascinating. Proverbs chapter 30, verse 18 and 19 says, there are three things too wonderful for me, four which I do not understand. The way, the derek, of an eagle in the sky, the way, or the derek, of a serpent on a rock, the way, or derek, of a ship in the middle of the sea, and the way, or the derek, of a man with a maid or a man with a woman. Now, notice the difference between the unique derek or way. The way an eagle flies in the sky is very different than the way a serpent crawls on a rock. And the way a ship is in the ocean is very different than a serpent or an eagle. Very different and unique way about them, or a man with a maid. Now, our job as parents is to figure out who we uniquely have, how God uniquely designed them and wired them and crafted them, and then help them become who they were meant to be, not who we want them to be. I remember one of the first times one of my boys said something like, I don't want to go fishing, I want to go golfing. And I'm like, what? You want to go what? You're a lens. You love to fish. No, I don't. Okay. So but you have to be honest about the things you want for your child, and is that really the way they're wired or what they want? How can parents are meant to come alongside of children and help them become who they are and what they want to do and be? One of the worst things a parent can do is to compare one of your children to one of your other children or to other children. Why can't you be more like your brother? Why can't you be more like your sister? And the answer is, because I'm not my brother. Because I'm not my sister. I'm me, would be the answer. I have a unique way, a unique derek. And the parent's meant to discover that and fan that flame. They're unique and special personality, gifting, talents, and you have to approach them differently because they are different. And on top of that, it's very possible that one of your children has a certain kind of foolishness that's different than the other kind of child that has a different kind of foolishness, and the way you discipline and correct is going to be different because their foolishness is different. So you really have to be a student of your child to help discover who they are and help them become the way that they should go. And when they're old, they won't depart if you've helped them in the way that they should go. Closing thoughts. Parenting is one of the highest callings in a person's life. It isn't easy. We're the primary ones who can raise them, but I think every parent, especially as the children are younger, say, I need help. I need help. And so the church is meant in part to come alongside of parents, not to replace parents, but to help parents in raising those children and teaching them wisdom. And that's why you may often hear us up here saying, hey, we need, you know, putting out pleas to help with children's ministry or to help with student ministries. And that's because parents can't do it alone. We need, it takes a village. It takes all of us helping because there's an all-out war on kids like never before. And I believe the evil one is trying to destroy children like never before. And so we've got to do whatever we can to join the fight, to fight evil, to fight anything that's going to come and harm children, our children, other children. And so that's why we're going to unabashedly, unashamedly, constantly invite you to be a part of ministering to children as the church comes alongside of parents. And some of you might not know this, but on the first Thursday of every month from October through June, June inclusive except for July and, or August and September, including July, I mean, on the first Thursday of every month, we have a family night where parents and children come together. They have a meal together. Their parents are with other parents. Kids are with other kids. They have a little teaching. They have a meal. They have fun. They have games. And just like, so we can help each other. So as we close, I want to acknowledge that raising kids is a tough job. And I want to encourage every parent here to stay in the fight, because it's not easy. And I'm sure there's days you just want to go, oh, I can't do this. But it matters. It really matters. And our focus can't be on how our kids turn out. Our focus has to be on being the best parent, by God's help, to do our best and to love the best we know how, and then to leave the results to God and to that child or to those children. Yeah, we should be open to consider ways that we failed either in the past or presently with our kids and be quick to own and ask for forgiveness. But I also want to encourage you not to take responsibility for bad choices that your son or daughter has made or is making. If you failed and you have guilt over how you've done, then ask for forgiveness from God and your child, but then it ends there. And every person's given the right to make their own choices, and some parents carry guilt over things their children have done and feel it's their fault, and it's not. Again, I say, if you failed, own it, ask forgiveness, but don't take responsibility for choices or behavior of your children. Our job is to do the best job we can with the aid of the Holy Spirit and then ask for forgiveness regularly. Our job is to, with God's help, drive out foolishness and to build in wisdom through example and instruction, and to do it all in the context of love. It takes a lot of energy and a lot of love to parent well, but it's worth it. So I'm going to just ask if every parent, if you're a single parent, if you're a parent of a dull kid, doesn't matter. If you're a parent, would you just stand? Because we would like to pray for you. Please stand. Father, we come to you as your children, acknowledging that you are a perfect parent. And help us to continually open ourselves up to your perfect parenting, your perfect love. I want to pray this morning, Lord, for, start with by praying for parents that are parenting alone, or parenting along with another parent, but they're no longer married to. Would you give them extra grace? They're caring a lot. Some parents this morning are enjoying seeing their children make good choices, and those kids are doing well and want to be thankful for that and enjoy that. But I know, Lord, that there's some that are here this morning that their hearts are broken because their child is in the far country or is far from you and making some bad choices, and it just breaks the parent's heart. There's other hearts that are broken this morning because of they've lost a child some way. Some are in pain today because their son or daughter have said or done things that have really hurt. Or a child's living in rebellion or being disrespectful. Some parents that are carrying shame and regret. There's others that are engaged in power struggles and didn't even know it. So, Lord, there's just such a vast array of need as we talk about this big subject of parenting. And I just want to bring every one of us as parents before you and just say, Lord, help us. Lord, help us. And would you just meet every person at their point of need, whatever they're struggling with, whatever they need this morning, would you just give an extra shot, an extra dose of grace and strength and wisdom and perseverance and endurance and whatever is needed, Lord, would you just give it even now as we just open ourselves up to you as a good father? We pray this in Christ's name. Amen.